So, Ahmed Chalabi, you remember the name, controversial Iraqi politician who advised the U.S. government to go to war in Iraq, insisted there would be weapons of mass destruction there. Let's listen to the voice of an individual who is a very famous expatriate leader in Iraq, who we were told by the American government would be a leader in the new Iraq after Saddam Hussein.
You have strong evidence that there's links between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein.
U.S.
Where are these? Where is this evidence, though?
In U.S. hands.
And that is a document that you could show us.
I've seen it, but I don't have it in my possession. I could show it to you, I think.
That's Ahmed Chalabi, Dr. Ahmed Chalabi, speaking on Frontline, a documentary that looked at the circumstances of the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Chalabi attempted to join the Iraqi government, was eventually voted out of office, and has faded from the scene. But his 36-year-old daughter is a historian, a PhD historian who graduated from Harvard and has written a new book called Late for Tea at the Deer Palace, which actually explores the history of her family long before the circumstances of 2003, from the time of the Ottoman Empire to today's post-war reconstruction period. Tamara Chalabi joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
How difficult and how often is it that you are asked to either defend or explain your controversial father?
I think it's only natural that people would want to ask me such questions. I think this is something common with children of prominent people, so it's fairly frequent. But it's not I don't believe that's my primary job to do that. I think he can defend himself if he so wishes.
And as the events in Iraq were unfolding in the 2003 period, had you received your PhD in history at Harvard, or were you still studying?
I was completing it.
So you were studying history and in the middle of history at the same time?
Absolutely.
That must have been very difficult.
It was overwhelming. Especially since I grew up in a household from a very early age that was absolutely obsessed with Saddam Hussein and his dictatorship and wanting to get rid of it and fighting it. And it wasn't just my father. So witnessing history unfold was very dramatic and out of control.
Indeed.
On many instances.
I remember in the events leading up to the invasion in 2003, I interviewed so many expatriates, not your father, but many others, people who had spent a generation or more in London waiting for this moment, this return, expecting that their expertise would be valued and wanted in Iraq. And it turned out not necessarily to be the case. Why do you think that was the case?
Because of U.S. occupation. I think that expertise would have been unbelievably valuable had they been given an opportunity to actually give out that expertise. But I think the course of events really hindered any possibility of a lot of Iraqis being involved in a direct way, because the U.S. at some point decided that they could do the job better and declared occupation, which I think was a huge mistake. And a lot of what's happened afterwards, particularly with issues of security and the insurgency, were a result of that.
And then being associated with the United States destroyed the credibility of individuals who you believe might have had more had there been more separation between Iraqi expats and the U.S. invasion.
To a certain extent, I do think it, again, goes back to occupation. I think many people in Iraq, you would be surprised, at the time, before the war, I remember being, for example, in northern Iraq on this very important day in February when all of the world went marching against the war. And people on the streets, Kurds, were shocked and dismayed that, you know, they felt that the world was against them because they were supporting Saddam. I mean, I don't think necessarily that the view in Iraq at the time was entirely in conjunction with what was going on in the world.
Talking with Tamara Chalabi, who's the author of Late for Tea at the Deer Palace. It's a memoir of your family's history in Iraq and in many ways chronicles the lost history that Americans really may not have the opportunity to know because we're so centered in the kind of what is Iraq given the world, IEDs. That's sort of pretty much what Americans know.
Unfortunately, I think Iraq is one of those places which recently there's been so much written about and yet in such a narrow way. And there's such a big disparity between, you know, reality and history. And I think the point of this book really is to almost unveil the curtain of what the real Iraq used to be like, to give a prism, a lens of what Iraqi society was about beyond the bombs, beyond the violence. And it's a very rich country, and I try to portray that in different ways.
In reading this book, I also sense that the mission is a kind of time warp, a time machine. It's almost as though you want to recreate the salon of your grandmother, isn't it?
Not really.
In the 1920s, who created this scene in Baghdad?
I mean, she was a very colorful woman, and she's one of the main characters of the book that readers meet early on. And I think, you know, one of the reasons I thought, well, I mean, other than I'm extremely fond of her, I mean, she's long past, but is the fact that as a woman from this part of the world, people have a perception of women being meek and submissive and oppressed and silent, and this was a very larger-than-life woman who did exactly what she wanted, who was very opinionated, who was forward-looking, who threw off the abaya, which is this long garment that women wear from head to toe, when she decided she just had enough of it in the 30s, caused a huge scandal as a result. A very colorful woman, and I think she wasn't unique. And I think this is interesting for people to read about the fabric of society, domestic life, what people, how people lived, where they lived, what they ate, what they wore, what they talked about. So it's all the things that have been lost behind the unfortunate violent headlines.
Can you imagine recreating, perhaps not her salon or her sense of scandal and iconoclasm, but can you imagine that sort of cultural swirl in a contemporary Iraq post-war?
I think there is potential for that to happen, and I think one of the things I hope to achieve with the book is to allow people to either discover for the first time or to rediscover what Iraq used to be like, and to use that as a template, as a point of inspiration for what could have been. I mean, you know, and Iraq's, for example, Iraq's relationship with this country was very interesting. You had, you know, U.S. missionaries setting up schools. You had Frank Lloyd Wright and Walter Gropius going to Baghdad designing buildings. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of things that were, you know, people-to-people exchange, which I think is the most important thing, and I think could happen again.
Is there a dream, a place, a moment, a gesture, a cup of tea, which is in the title of your book, that would bring back some of these dreams of your family's history in Iraq? Place you would go, that you might take me?
In Baghdad?
Yeah.
Yes, there is.
Where?
It's called the Seif. It's a palm garden. It used to belong to my great-grandfather. And it's a very peaceful place where we're doing a lot of humanitarian projects, actually, I'm involved in. And it's a place of healing. And I think it's a good springboard for what could happen in a positive way with civil society.
And you've got a lot of talking and explaining to do, given the sort of reputation of your father. But you're ready for it in this book.
I don't think that's the point of the book. I did not write this book to explain anything about my father. I mean, I'm very clear that that's his story and he can do it himself.
But the Chalabi story is a longer one in Iraq.
Much longer one.
Tamara Chalabi is the author of Late for Tea at the Deer Palace. It's her memoir of her family's history in Iraq. She's the daughter of Ahmed Chalabi. Tamara, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that's The Takeaway. You can weigh in on anything on this program at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.